We've got Sam, who is apparently in a pub enjoying the products of another kind of fungus, actually a yeast, that Saccharomyces cerevisiae, and he wants to know actually about something that Tim works on. Hi, Sam.
Yeah, hi there.
What's your question?
Yeah, my question was about the noroviruses you were talking about and whether there was whether they display any seasonality at all. They were compared to influenza viruses, and I wondered if there was any... and influenza viruses obviously have a large seasonal component. I wondered if that was the same for the noroviruses.
Very good question. Noroviruses used to be called winter vomiting disease because they mainly occurred in the winter. Interestingly, influenza is called influenza because of influenza da Freddo, the influence of the cold. That's how the Italians realised flu was about. The only time you get noroviruses significantly in the summer months is when you get a new virus strain from an RNA mutation, and then that can cause summer infections. More usually, you get them between October and March. You're quite right.
Good question. Do you want to go at the quiz?
Oh, yeah, sure.
OK. Each degree of longitude on the Earth is equivalent to a time difference of 10 minutes. Fact or fiction, Sam?
I'm just trying to do the maths. Sorry. I'll say fact.
I'm afraid it's actually 4 minutes. Do you want me to do the maths? Have we got time? 24 hours in a day, 60 minutes in an hour, meaning there are 24 times 60, which is 1,440 minutes in a day. There are 360 degrees in a circle. Divide the two together and you get four.
4 minutes.
Thank you.
You've got to get the next one correct to stay in the game, basically.
Okay.
A day on the moon lasts 28 times longer than a day on Earth, Sam. Fact or fiction?
Fiction.
Oh dear, I'm afraid not. The moon is spinning more slowly than the Earth.
Oh,
it takes
dear.
28 and a half days to complete one revolution.
Thanks for your question, Sam. It's a great question.
Thank you.
Good having you on the programme.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Peter is in Carbrook and he reckons he knows the answer to our teaser. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Chris.
What have you calculated?
Well, I haven't calculated anything, mate. Every week I get my boys to sort of try and help me out. I've got three sons, and then we text in what we think is a carefully calculated answer. And this week they said, "You're on your own, Dad." So I just guessed at 500,000.
Ooh, now, hang on. What I'm going to do is make Helen actually go through the calculation because she's done the hard work and done the sums, and we'll see if you're right. So you stay there just a second, all right? Hi, Helen.
Okay, good.
You go for it.
Okay, so bear with me. What we have is the base, based on the area of a pinhead, of a square millimetre and a half square millimetres. Then the area of the widest point of our E. coli, we're going to take the length and times it by the diameter, and we come up with 1.6 picometres, which is 1.6 times 10 to the minus 12. There's a lot of zeros before that, 1.6. And then divide the area of your pinhead by the area of the bacterium, and we come up with 9375000000, or just around about a million. So we think, yes, you're pretty close with 500,000. So fantastic, yes.
So it's definitely the closest that we've had.
It is the closest we've had.
We've got two prizes you could pick from. So as you're the first person, do you want the periodic table of elements, the rather fun and funky wrap-up of what's in the world around us, or would you like a copy of Naked Science, which is my book?
I'd like your book, please.
Okie dokie, there's one in the post to you.
Thank you very much indeed.
Great having you on the programme.
I think my answer was a lot easier than your young lady's.
Oh, I don't know, I wouldn't say that. It was a good guess, though. You were spot on.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, I've got an email here from Ingrid. Ingrid is in Seattle at the University of Washington Department of Microbiology. She says, "Dear Dr. Chris, first of all, I want to tell you and the staff at The Naked Scientist that I love your show. I listen to it whilst I'm doing lab work. I'm a graduate student in microbiology." Thanks, Ingrid. She says, "I'm writing in response to a caller's question in this week's Q&A show in which bacterial movement along a concentration gradient, or chemotaxis, was discussed. You mentioned that the bacterium tastes on what side of the cell the nutrients are in a higher concentration, and then it swims in that direction. It is true that the bacteria detect a concentration of nutrients and they tend to swim towards the higher concentrations, but the way that you said the bug senses the gradient wasn't the whole story. It cannot detect a gradient on one side of the cell compared to the other because the bacterium is very small. Instead, the bacterium measures the concentration of nutrients in its environment and compares that to the concentration an instant ago while it was swimming, which tells the bug if it's going up or down a concentration gradient. If it's swimming up the gradient, that's good for the bug, then it will prefer to continue in that direction. If not, then it tries to change direction or randomly picks a new direction and retests for nutrients. In this way, the microorganism senses a nutrient gradient temporally, but not spatially. Thank you very much for a fantastic podcast. I learn a huge amount from your show. Keep up the good work, Ingrid. So thank you for that, Ingrid, for clarifying that for us. Well, that's pretty much all we've got time for this week. But next time, instead of looking down a microscope, we're going to be looking up into the atmosphere. And that's because John Grattan will be on the line from Aberystwyth to tell us about volcanoes and what's said to be the biggest atmospheric pollution event in history. We'll also be hearing from Jonathan Shanklin. He's from the British Antarctic Survey. He discovered 20 years ago the hole in the ozone layer, and he'll be updating us on the current status of the ozone layer and how that's unfolding. And also, you may have heard of a ship in a bottle, but in Kitchen Science next week, Ben Valsler and Dave Ansell will be finding out how you can make a weather system in a bottle. What you're going to need, if you want to do it at home, that is an empty plastic bottle, a drop of water, and a match. Now, for more cutting-edge science in the meantime, do check out the Nature Podcast, which we also make. That's at nature.com/nature/podcast. And all it remains for me to say is, if you can spare 5 seconds, do join us on our Naked Scientist discussion forum at nakedscientist.com/forum. Lots of people from all around the world discussing their interest in science. Be lovely to have you there too. I'd also like to say a very big thank you to everyone who's helped us with this week's show. Thank you to our guests, Scott Manalis at the beginning, Tim Riggett, Ali Ashby, Gillian Fraser, and also to our production team, Petro Minch and Ben Valsler. If you have any science questions for us in the meantime, or you just want to say hi, we love hearing from you, drop me a line, chris@nakedscientist.com. Until then, goodbye.